Hello and welcome to the Mindful World Summit. I'm Dr. Stacy, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by Nisha Saxena. Nisha is a registered dietitian, pediatric and family nutritionist, founder of Vibrant Nutrition, and a proud mama of two. She's also a regular expert who appears on national television and print publications, you know, doing what she does, living her purpose, which is to transform lives through nutrition. And to be there throughout the life of the family for that really important part of our life. And so I am so thankful that you decided to join us today. Nisha, thank you and welcome to the summit.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Now, listen, I got to tell you, well, first of all, I mean, I love nutrition and everything about it.
Yeah.
But I have to say that, you know, there's nothing that has killed my joy of cooking more than having children.
Yeah, and this is something that I hear a lot. You're definitely not alone in this idea, mm-hmm. because I think what happens is we go from being these totally autonomous beings, you know, making things at a whim, doing what we like, what we feel like our body wants, to all of a sudden having all these expectations around food. And mm-hmm. that can sometimes be the thing that makes it more stressful and it makes it less fun, or it does in the beginning at least.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, what I find is was the different transitions, different stages, this battle within the self and between yourself and this other being. And it feels like a push and pull yes. kind of thing. I mean, I think the first time I had awareness of that was transitioning my child, my firstborn, from breastfeeding to food, like yeah, big people solid. Food.
Yeah.
And then the worry around them getting the right stuff when I was breastfeeding, it wasn't a worry. And like, you know, so, and every stage where they become more autonomous
yeah.
and can say no.
Yeah, I know. And you're really, as the parent, I mean, the friction is really coming from, you obviously want to do the best thing for your child. And yeah. you're constantly learning about foods and what are the right foods to feed my child in what form at this stage. And you're wanting them to, you want them to feel and believe what you feel and believe about food. You know that there's nutritious foods that need to go in their body to help them and grow, but they're in a place where they're still experimenting with, you know, tastes, flavors, shapes, things coming in and out of their body, and they're not on the same page as you. So a huge part of the friction just comes from the expectation for that your child, when you expect them to eat and you want them to eat, and or if you expect them to eat certain foods and you want them to eat certain foods, that's really coming from you. And mm-hmm. if we give them a little bit more room and space and kind of step back and not make it as much about what we desperately want for our kids or what we know that they have to have, and instead think, well, here's what I'm going to offer. You know, here's what mm-hmm. I know would be good. Mm-hmm. And this child is going to go ahead and choose what works for them at that time. And it's sort of, I liken it to sometimes when you're feeding your children, they can really quote unquote yank your chain. So you've got this chain that's connected to you mm-hmm. and they've got the other end of it, and you've got a behavior that you want to happen or a food you want to go in the body or something you expect. You spend time making a healthy meal, you expect your child to eat it. And what it is it's really that chain is getting yanked. And my advice mm-hmm. to parents is to just remove the chain. Okay. So if you remove that chain, then there's no real ability for your child to be yanking at your expectation. And instead, if you make it about, well, here's this food. I know it's great. I enjoyed making it. It's nutritious. It's healthy. We're eating together. I'm going to enjoy this moment, and I'm going to let go of the expectation of what's going to go into your body.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really having to manage your, like really dropping the need for control in that situation
yeah.
and allowing the child, I guess, to make their choices among and like choices that's presented to them.
Absolutely. And so it makes, now I can hear parents, their wheels are turning going like, what are you talking about? If I gave my 2-year-old the option, they would eat a cupcake at every meal, right? So of course, that's not what I'm referring to, but the idea that you are as a parent, it is your job and your role to provide that nutritious food, to make sure that it's offered at regular intervals, that it's healthy, it's nourishing, but it really is your child's job to decide what's going to go into the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about catering to them if you know that, oh, well, they just love pasta, so I'm just going to give them pasta for every meal, because that's not really parenting, right? It's about mm-hmm. offering them what we know will be best for them. But then it really is up to us to trust them in that moment and teach them that this is how we eat, and this we eat together. It's a community experience. It's a communal experience. It's a relaxed experience. And there's no chain that connects you and your child in that moment to the expectation of what has to happen. You've done your job if you're offering your child well-balanced, healthy, nourishing food at regular intervals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's a lot that you just said in terms of like the family meal, like that in itself, different depending on the, yes. the ages of the children, depending on parents' schedules. Like sometimes that family meal is not the picture that you just painted of everyone sitting around relaxed in community together.
Yes. You definitely want, when you're talking about a family setting and the family dynamic, to stay as relaxed as possible. You don't want the eating experience to become about what everyone's putting into their body, or whether somebody likes something or whether they don't like something. All of those things really involve judgment. You know, they're really about judging the food, judging our bodies, judging someone else for a choice that they've made. And all of that is sort of not really what the experience of eating should be about. It should be about, we've come together to nourish ourselves. We're going to talk about all of, you know, whatever's happened. It depends on the age of your child. When they're really small, you can just be talking about fun things and ideas, mm-hmm. that stories, things that they like. What are your plans for the next day? Mm-hmm. And you get into talking with older children, you can actually talk about their day and kind of download information. But I encourage families not to like over focus on what is occurring in the meal and who's eating what and who's doing what, but instead mm-hmm. to bring it out to like a macro focus. Mm-hmm. The less you focus on that, the less sort of dynamical issues there is in that moment.
Mm, okay. So we're not getting yanked and we're not getting pulled yeah. into like a control battle.
Yes, exactly. Because sometimes, you know, depending again on the age of your child, if you've had a tough day with your child because you've got very young children, and perhaps they've been having a tough day and mm-hmm. people are emotional, people aren't following through with what we want them to do. Somebody's sick, somebody's tired. It's really hard to, in that moment, then expect a behavior from your child. And it's mm-hmm. it's not really fair because they may not be in a place where they want to actually put broccoli into their mouth. Mm-hmm. So, but if you've brought the family together, and it's a more relaxed environment, and you know, put some soft music on, there's automatically a shift, and there's this mm-hmm. shift away from energy of, well, I've had a really hard day with you, and I just want you to put that into your mouth because I'll get some satisfaction out of that. Mm-hmm. Really about, well, here's what we have, and let's just see what happens in this process of this 20 minutes. And mm-hmm. after that, you know, we're going to move on to the next activity.
Okay. Now, okay. I'm
thinking about it takes a bit of practice. So yeah. It isn't something sometimes, this is what, to your point, when you go from being an individual, mm-hmm. you don't think like this at all. You don't even have these concepts in your mind because mm-hmm. you're cooking and preparing food for yourself or maybe a partner, you know, and you're completely autonomous. So it's not until you get into the situation of having to see somebody not want to do what you expect when it comes to eating, that then all of a sudden you're a bit triggered, and it can be some, that's where you have to start to practice this mm-hmm. kind of alternative way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it takes a bit of practice.
Yeah. And you know, I have a question for you. I mean, do kids, I'm talking about young kids to begin with, right? Let's just talk about them for a little bit because they're very much in the exploring kind of phase of things. And, you know, that's kind of setting the tone too, like when they're new to food. And I'm wondering, like, do kids have a natural ability to gravitate towards what their bodies need, or do they need more guidance, or is it all over the map? Like,
yeah.
Like if you make the choices available, do they tend to fill in the gaps? Like maybe it's not in the order that we think of, but on, you know, there's a day or a couple days where they're all about fruit and then they're just like wanting vegetables or they're wanting meats or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I see what you're saying. Like definitely it's in a typically developing child. When mm-hmm. you see, you know, foods offered day to day to day, they're just like us. So there's going to be some days where their palate or their appetite, you know, maybe they're remembering, wow, I really like that banana. I like that banana. I like that texture. I like that taste. It's mushy. I want that. But mm-hmm. within hours, you know, children mm-hmm. in that really young age category, under 5, they can change their minds instantly. Mm-hmm. And so, as you know, right? So then you wake up Wednesday morning and offer your child a banana, and it's like you're torturing them. That's mm-hmm. it's just a strange shift that can happen. Mm-hmm. In terms, so that's definitely true. Their tastes and change can shift day to day. They can, and when we calculate whether a child is actually getting what they need, we really look at it over time. So we mm-hmm. don't look at, you know, well, every day this child had this many vegetables, this much fruit. We look over time if your child's okay. being offered this wide variety of foods, and over time, here and there, they're consuming this wide variety of foods, even in small amounts, sometimes in larger amounts, we see that the chronic diet of the child is actually balanced. And that's the majority of the reason why they grow and develop well. It's really only when you see a kid who's not growing and developing well, or there's issues there, that's a real red flag to kind of take a look into what that child's eating, or the patterns that they have set up in a household, to make sure that everything's there to kind of support proper growth and development. One thing I will say is sometimes people feel like, well, if my child's craving fruit, I should give them more fruit, because they are able to tell that their body needs that particular set of vitamins. That's not actually true.
Okay. Tell us what is the case.
So it's not actually scientific. My child's craving for these carbohydrate foods, or fruit in particular, which means that they actually... Pardon?
Oh, I think we're frozen for a second. Can you go over again? Maybe there was something with our connection. We'll edit that out. But can you tell me again? Like, this is a really important point. So it's not necessarily...
Sorry, I just lost the connection here.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, let's try again.
Shoot, I'm losing you.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's try that one more time.
We'll just edit all this out. But
okay, try that again. Sorry.
Okay, so this myth that kids are good at directing, you know, if we just follow their...
Yeah, no.
That, no.
Not necessarily.
No? Okay.
So the one thing that, no. So the one thing they're really good at is, and this is something actually that's becoming a problem, I think, in more modern families, they need carbohydrate. So 55 to 60% of a young child's diet needs to be carbohydrate. And when I say carbohydrates, I mean things from the grains group, fruits, vegetables, legumes, beans, peas, lentils. If you do dairy products, it's really, those are all carbohydrates. And so children need energy. So certainly they have a bit of a genetic and like an evolutionary advantage to be drawn to foods that are going to give them energy quickly. Hmm. Those are the classic things parents will say. All my child wants is pasta, or they love bread, or they love rice, or mm-hmm. they love potatoes, but they don't seem to be wanting some of these other foods that take longer to digest. Well, they definitely will if they see those foods often in different forms and they're offered those foods often. But there is a bit of an innate drive to get energy. Okay. So you don't really often see a child who's like drawn to only wanting to eat butter, you know? maybe an adult, but not usually a child, just because of the fact that, you know, butter doesn't have any carbohydrates. It has energy, but it's not going to affect our blood glucose.
Okay.
So... that is true. Kids want energy. They require energy at really regular intervals, every couple hours. But for them to be able to tell, well, my body needs vitamin C and I'm craving, you know, oranges, that doesn't really pan out in science. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And are there certain kinds of foods that in particular are good for our brains, like the brain health and the developing brain?
Absolutely. So there's a whole variety of foods. Some of them are specific to the development of neurotransmitters, and some of them are just straight up energy, and others are healthy fats. And the combination of those things are very important for early brain development. So as an example, choline, which mm-hmm. is spelled C-H-O-L-I-N-E. That's a mm-hmm. substance that is found in animal products, but it's in very high amounts in egg yolk. And that is an excellent first food for young children and for children who can eat eggs, because it's so rich in choline, which is so important for the development of those neurotransmitters in the brain. Mm-hmm. And eggs happen to be, you know, full of great protein and other different minerals and vitamins as well. So that's an example of a real fantastic, easy brain-boosting food. other things such as total energy. I know that sounds like, well, what does that really mean? Sometimes people, if you're in a household where you as parents are sort of avoiding carbohydrates, mm-hmm. I've seen this happening more and more with some of my clients, children are inadvertently being offered less energy. So they're offered okay. less energy dense food. You know, maybe you're not making pasta anymore in your house because you're trying to avoid it, but it's a really energy rich, mineral rich food for kids. And so sometimes it can be a matter of that there's just not enough energy offered. And the brain is a dedicated glucose utilizer. So your mm-hmm. child's brain turns over glucose at a rate of about 6 times of an adult brain, which is sort of picture that as like a coal engine, and you're putting coal into that engine. You need to put in 6 times as much to keep a child's engine running. Mm. So we want to make sure that total energy they're offered is sufficient, because otherwise then you won't get proper brain development and growth.
Okay.
Fish is another big one. So the essential fat, the omega-3 fatty acid called docosahexaenoic acid, DHA, it's mm-hmm. very important for the development of, again, the neurons and the actual coating around the nerves in the brain and the nervous system. Okay. It's a fatty acid. And it's interesting because our human bodies, we can't take longer fatty acids, eat longer fatty acids, and make them into the short ones we need. It's a really interesting sort of failure of mm-hmm. human evolution. We must get the short fatty acids in their short form and use mm-hmm. them in the short form. And so DHA is found in fish, and it's really hard to get that good quality DHA in other foods. So we really mm-hmm. recommend parents be feeding their children fish twice a week if possible as a mm-hmm. source of that really important essential fat.
Okay. And for people out there who might be vegetarian, is there anything that comes close to that?
You can definitely find, it depends if you're vegetarian and you're not vegan, there's definitely options for, they found a way to make algae, which are still technically sort of a living thing, produce mm-hmm. DHA in the same way as a fish does in its blood and in its body. And okay. so you can use, with small children in particular, fortified foods that utilize algal DHA can be fantastic because you're getting the DHA in its real form. Hmm. When we choose vegetarian or more vegan options, things like soybean oil, canola oil, walnuts, ground flaxseed, mm-hmm. these are sources of another kind of a fat called alpha-linolenic acid. Mm-hmm. It is also an omega-3 fatty acid, but it is not, it needs to be converted in our body to that DHA format. Mm-hmm. So if you have enough of those ALA acids, that's definitely beneficial. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the human body doesn't convert that fatty acid very well. Females tend to convert it better than males.
Okay.
That being said, you know, there's billions of vegetarians, plant-based people in the world, mm-hmm. And it can be just that the variety and the amount of plant foods that they're eating is so mm-hmm. high that okay. they are pushing more of that ALA into the DHA pathway, but it's mm-hmm. probably not the most efficient way to get fatty acids.
I see. Okay.
But it can be done.
Okay. Well, thank you for offering that range because, yeah. you know, people, but it's a good point because, you know, again, like what you're describing there is what's happening with the parents around their nutritional choices. And we're consuming a lot of information that is directed at adults as opposed to children. And, you know, there's also a lot of awareness. I mean, there's so much information and misinformation out there. It's hard to make sense of it all.
Yeah.
But there is this growing concern about children's health, diabetes showing up early.
Yeah, absolutely.
Weight.
Yeah.
And so it seems, you know, and their nutrition plays a big role in that. And so, you know, for people in terms of thinking about nutrition and carbs, are there some general rules of thumb? Because there's lots of carbs out there.
Yeah.
And clearly some are better than others. So can you give us some rules of thumb around that?
Sure, absolutely. So carbohydrate is important. Even if you are an adult and you're in middle age, you generally speaking need some level of carbohydrate in your diet. Now, I will say everybody's different and people have different beliefs and different reasons that they may be changing the macronutrients in their diet. But some real golden rules about carbohydrate are, for adults, we are not growing anymore. Well, spiritually, but not probably physically. We're not growing anymore. And so we need lower glycemic carbohydrates. So this means these are the carbohydrates, beans, peas, lentils, whole intact grains. If you do dairy, it can be dairy can be part of that. All of the carbohydrate sources that when we eat them, they turn to sugar very slowly in our bloodstream. Mm-hmm. They have kind of an undulating wave when they are digested in the body as glucose. They don't create a big spike. Mm-hmm. So all adults, we know this from data in type 2 diabetes. We know this from the data in research into the heart health benefits of the Mediterranean diet. This is like millions of years of people data now show us that eating those whole carbohydrate foods that are low in glycemic index over time, very beneficial for human health, beneficial for preventing disease, also beneficial for managing chronic disease that you may already have. Mm-hmm. When it comes to kids, though, kids actually benefit from a balance of both mostly low glycemic, but they actually need some of those higher glycemic index foods, especially very active kids, some of those foods that turn to sugar more quickly, things like bagels or, you know, different.
Oh, we got something's happening.
And bread products, different products.
So can you say that again, just so our connection, so the bagels and breads and high active child.
Yeah. Well, not even for the active child, for every child, about 50% of what they eat, we want them to be exposed to those nice low glycemic carbohydrates that we as adults want. Mm. But they can actually benefit from some of the more high glycemic foods, even something like, you know, a whole wheat bagel. Most people would find that's a lot of carbohydrate, but a young child can absolutely utilize that because remember, they are still growing and developing. So they need that fast energy, that rapid energy. And that's not to say that the most of their diet should be these white, refined, processed foods. Absolutely not. However, they definitely have room in their diet to have those. And there are fitting places for those types of foods. Things like, as I mentioned, some of the bread products, some more typically refined, enriched flour products, some cereals, some higher glycemic grains like a white rice compared to like a wild rice. Mm-hmm. Kids can definitely benefit from that. So you don't want to be restrictive and you don't want to remove those really nice glucose-rich opportunities for kids.
Okay. All right. So I'm picturing my carb corner in my kitchen and not feeling as bad about it this whole week. But that's really helpful because, you know, again, it's a question that comes up within ourselves when we're doing something different. Now, you know, the other thing that kind of comes up around food, again, with the parents' attitudes around food, and you work with families, kids of all ages.
Yes.
And I think this is a great opportunity to hear from you, like some of the dynamics that you have picked up on, some of the insights from the work of all the families that you work with. When it comes to being conscious and mindful, what are some of the things that you're seeing in the kids in terms of their relationship with food that is part of maybe the family culture that we as parents want to be aware of?
Well, I think that's such an excellent point. I think parenting is the best mirror in the world in so many ways. And when we start to feed our children and eat as a family, that's when a lot of things we didn't realize were tucked away kind of start to come out. So some families and some parents have already dealt with difficult relationships with food themselves. Perhaps they've been overeating. Perhaps they've had disordered eating patterns in the sort of feast and famine, having, you know, binge amounts of food and then very small amounts of food or eating unhealthy foods. And now they're faced with having these little people that they actually have to provide better quality nutrition for. So sometimes that can be a real pull to say, well, I don't really eat this way, but I know I need to change. And so what I can often say to parents is your children will always eat in a way that they see you eat. They will not eat in a pattern or a behavior based on what you tell them to eat. So we really as parents need to be aware of our own relationships with food, our own preferences, our own patterns, because those are the things that our children will pick up on. And it doesn't take very long for a young child to notice, you know, my dad never eats vegetables. You know, he just never has vegetables. He doesn't like it. Maybe you have a parent in the house that's being expressive and negatively expressive about things like, oh, I don't like that. Or, ooh, oh, there's no way I'm eating fish. That's awful. You'll quickly have a child that says, oh, I'm not eating that either. Yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. Uh-huh. And part of that is because our children have ultimate focus. All they want all day long is our face, in their face. You know, we are everything to them. And therefore, there's a bit of an evolutionary drive for them to follow the patterns that they see us there, you know, where they're protectors and we're the kind of heads of the pack. Well, they're gonna follow that pattern, regardless of if I say, well, this broccoli is really good for you, so you should try it. Mm-hmm. If they don't see us eating those foods, then they're not going to want to eat those foods either. Mm-hmm. So it's really just a moment of becoming mindful when you're all of a sudden presented with eating balanced, nourishing food as a parent, checking in and saying, you know, what feels strange here? Does it feel strange not to overserve myself a huge plate of pasta and not have any of that vegetables that are offered? You know, or am I used to just eating a large piece of meat and not really anything else when that's not something that's really balanced? Mm-hmm. I think the other piece is making sure that how you were coached when you were a child in terms of your own eating environment, those are the things that they just start to come right out of your mouth and you don't even realize it. As soon as you're in that dynamic setting, if you were told as a child that you need to finish all of the food that's presented to you, that mm-hmm. plate has to be empty or you're not leaving this table. Yeah. If you were bribed as a child, oh, just go ahead and have a few more bites of this and then we'll give you some of that. Yeah. If you were rewarded with food as a child, you know, oh, well, you're doing really good. Once you're done, I'll give you some ice cream. All of these little things that lead to essentially trying to control behavior with food. Mm-hmm. That's all also the things that we as parents want to be mindful of. You want to hear the dialogue that's kind of recorded in your mind mm-hmm. about how you were coached when you were eating with your family. Maybe you didn't even eat family dinners. So mm-hmm. maybe you don't even understand why is it important for families to eat together. Maybe you all ate in separate rooms at different times. I've seen that a lot. Yeah. Or that whole constant of people who didn't have a lot of money growing up and finances and resources were very tight, you will eat everything on that plate, even if you don't like it, even mm-hmm. if you're full and your body's telling you to stop, you're going to mm-hmm. finish it because this is the time that we have food available to us. Mm-hmm. And all of these kinds of patterns can change the way that you parent, and they'll change the feeling that you have when you have food in front of you as a family. So you want to be mindful as those things come up for you as a parent. Mm-hmm. Try and start doing that work to kind of question, you know, why do I feel like I need to tell my child to finish their plate? Why am I saying that? Why am I trying to get my child to eat vegetables by offering them a dessert after they eat their vegetables? Why don't I just allow them to choose what they want to eat? So I always ask parents to kind of question those things. Yeah.
Right.
And I see it a lot.
Oh, sure. Like as you're talking, I'm thinking about, oh yeah, if you eat that, you don't get to have dessert unless you eat that. Cause then, you know, like the whole transaction, yeah. right. That goes
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And the idea just even that, you know, without realizing it, you'll start to fetishize certain foods. You know, if we always say, well, there's this meal that's offered, but the really good thing is coming at the end and it's the thing that you're really going to want. So I'm going to make sure that I coax you and I lead you along with this. And if you're good enough, you're going to get this really good thing at the end of the meal. You know, that model, I think it generally, historians will agree, it kind of comes from a more puritanical look at how we eat in other cultures, Asian, South Asian, Central Asian cultures. Meals tend to have all flavors at one meal. So they'll be sweet, mm-hmm. they'll be salty, they'll be sour, they'll be bitter. It's more of a puritanical concept that all of the main meal has no sweet. And then there's this really sweet thing that comes at the end of the meal. And it's something that you can shift, you know, you don't have to have those things be separate. Mm-hmm. I actually encourage families if they are dessert eaters to go ahead and offer whatever the small amount of what you want to have with the meal.
Interesting.
Because you really don't want to separate. Yeah. Food is food, you know. Some of it has more sugar than other bits. Some of it has more salt than other bits, but it's all food. And so it can all be eaten at the same time. A child can make the choice. Now I know every parent out there is like, are you crazy? Of course, then they're going to sit down and eat the cupcake first. Yeah, they might do that a few times. They might do that every time. But if they're offered that choice and they also have their dinner there in front of them, whichever mm-hmm. type of dietary pattern you follow, it's a very, very relaxing experience. They say, oh, yeah, well, I have everything here. And then they start to get very autonomous about their food choices. There's no real difference, you know. Each of those foods has some value. Of course, I don't suggest that every meal have a high sugar treat at the end of it. Mm-hmm. But even if some days have fruit, and some parents will, you know, try to use fruit as a dessert, just offer fruit at the meal because it doesn't need to be separate.
Okay.
Each of those foods has nutritional value. They each do great things for our body. So go ahead and have them in whichever order you prefer. Yeah.
You know what? That is revolutionary. I love that. It just takes the pressure. It takes the pressure off, and it being about like punishment reward. It's like these are the range of foods. And you know what? As you're talking about that, I'm thinking about times when my daughter has, and my son actually, have decided that they want to have tomatoes for dessert. Like just something. You know what I mean? It seems like more like a supper food.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you know what? Yeah. Like it's all getting in there, you know, like we can just have it all there. And then it saves me from like, you know, getting up like, I have dessert now. I want to have this fruit. And I'm just like, okay, can we just all be on the same? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's just, here's the food in front of us and you can have whatever you want. And the other thing is there's a lot of preconceived notions about where foods fit, you know, like in the morning, you don't need to have sweet foods in the morning. That's also a very, you know, certain cultures tend to do that, but you don't have to do that. So just opening yourself up when you're a parent and questioning, I don't have to have sweet cereal, sugary cereal in the morning. Maybe I want to wake up and have some tofu rice and some vegetables because that feels more nourishing. Mm-hmm. Also opening up the ideas about what foods you can have at certain times. And in the spectrum of your day, if most of the food that you're eating is whole food, you really don't have to worry.
Mm-hmm.
The number one tip I have for parents is processed food, highly processed food. Mm-hmm. If you are making that the smallest part of your diet, then you're doing fantastic.
Okay. Okay.
If highly processed food is more than 20% of what you're eating in a day, then I would start to look at that and try and shift.
Okay.
20% is still high, but 20% is like, that's where that would be very high. And anywhere that you can go 20% or lower is a much better place to be than where most people are right now.
So when we're talking about highly processed food, just so we understand, it's like basically anything that comes in a package.
Pretty like other much.
Than vegetables sometimes, but like anything that has like lots of ingredients in it.
Yes. Something that's had to be sent to a manufacturing plant, had several, many different components added to it, has preservatives, things that have to be added to it so it maintains its integrity over time, mm-hmm. things that last a long time on the shelf. You know, technically speaking, things like fortified soy beverage or bread. I mean, they're processed. Bread doesn't grow on trees and soy milk doesn't grow in the ground. However, the processing is minimal and sometimes it can actually add nutrition to that food. So there are certain foods like steel cut oatmeal. We couldn't eat oatmeal in its uncut form. It's just too impossible to eat. Mm-hmm. So minimally processed foods that offer us a lot of nutrition, that's not what really I'm talking about. It's mm-hmm. more the foods that have a lot of ingredients and a lot of different mechanisms that have been applied to it from its natural state, and it is in a package, that those foods tend to have the wrong trifecta of salt, added chemicals, and sugars. And mm-hmm. that's the thing that we don't have control over. So we don't want our diet to be mostly those foods.
Okay. So as I've heard before, is it accurate to say that the outside edges of the grocery store where we want to be most of the time and just a tiny amount from the middle. Is that right?
Total, 100% true. That's fantastic. You want to shop the perimeter. Mm-hmm. And that's where you also, you know, food costs have risen excessively. In the past 5 years, they've gone up 18% in Canada anyway. And food costs for a family can be a huge problem and a huge part of people's economic issue. And so spending the best amount of money you have in that perimeter, you want to spend the bulk of your financial budget for food on those nutrient dense foods. They don't have to be all fresh produce. Frozen produce can be fantastic. It is picked and flash frozen, and it's a lot more economical. But when you spend most of your money on those items and you just pick up some of the dry goods like pastas, rices, potentially canned fish, canned beans, tomato sauces in the center, then that's really creating a much more balanced diet over time. And you're spending your money in the right place.
Right. Now, the other thing that comes with the expensive food is time.
Yeah.
Right. And then people find doing this trade-off. And, you know, some people in the family are taxed more with the food prep than others.
Yes.
And so, you know, these days we are living very busy lives. Many times households, everybody is working. The kids are busy. They have activities. And then it's like, oh, what are we going to eat? And eating out whatever we can throw in the microwave or heat up quickly, that can become more of the norm. And so I guess what I wonder about is, I don't know if you have any answers or tips for this, but in terms of just the organization and coordinating all of those realities of life when we're eating healthy, do you have any suggestions for families and for parents?
I definitely do. And I know this is probably not the popular answer, but I'm going to say it. I think that convenience is our enemy. You know, we live, when you describe the busyness of our life, working parents, children with school and activities, maybe we're also taking care of our elders and all of that's happening at the same time. Something's got to give. And the problem is when the thing that you're giving is like a life skill, the life skill of learning nourishment, understanding how important it is, unfortunately, that has the most drastic effect on health, physical, emotional, mental health. So it's not the place to let go. It's the place to hold on. And my suggestion to busy families is always let go of something else. So maybe it's one less activity for someone in the family, or it's one less racing across town to make a play date, or just scheduling your life so that there are pockets of time that you prioritize for shopping and cooking. If it's people working on a regular Monday to Friday schedule, I always suggest at one of the weekend days, there needs to be some shopping and some food preparation for the week. And people will say, oh, it's the weekend, I want to relax, or they have, you know, the kids have a soccer tournament and then we have this and we have time for
Oh, lost a bit of the connection here.
In the 168 hours or something we have waking hours in a week. Oh, that's okay. Tell me when we get it back. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah, you've kind of frozen. I guess maybe if I pause the recording.
Okay.
So we're back, and you were telling us about, really, I mean, the realities of many people's lives is they are busy.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the main thing that you're talking about is understanding the importance of the meals.
Yeah.
And prioritizing that.
Yeah, and it doesn't sometimes, in the modern life, it doesn't feel like it should be a priority. It feels like it's an necessary thing. And I think that's actually missing the point. I think it's teaching our kids the wrong things. Mm-hmm. We see so many kids now that are in their late teens and early 20s that have absolutely no ability to take care of themselves because they have not learned these really basic life skills, how to shop, how to prepare food, how to store food, how to budget to buy food. I have young clients that will spend $1,000 a month on Uber Eats. And this is leading to all kinds of, it spins out into everything, mental health issues, financial ruin. so we have to make it a priority. So it means that some other thing we give up to make time for cooking and food preparation on a weekly cycle. Whatever your cycle is, and if you say, well, I have a partner that works shift work, but one person doesn't work shift work, then you have to work it out as a family and figure out, well, who's going to do that shopping, and then who on their off day is going to be doing this cooking. I always encourage families. One thing we forget, we try to have all of this really intense family time with our kids. Like it has to be, you know, we're all wearing matching pajamas, or we're all on a vacation somewhere, or we're all spending, you know, a whole bunch of money to go on a tour of a bridge. It's like being in the kitchen, cutting up your food and talking to each other. That is quality family time. That Absolutely. Is valuable family time. And when you're doing that on a regular basis, it's a lot cheaper and a lot easier to get true connection. So yeah. It works in both ways. You're making more time for your family. You're actually having better family time together, and you are learning how to nourish your body.
Yeah.
So I always suggest for busy families, you should be shopping weekly, every 7 days, no matter what. And you should always be cooking at least twice a week, if not more. Mm-hmm. But twice would be the minimum. So if right. you're already not doing that, and I understand as kids get older, they have tons of activities, weekend activities, and parents have activities, and we have things we want to do to stay, you know, who we are as individual people. But everyone's got to kind of, you got to look at the whole picture, and you can't take away that time from food prep and planning and nourishment for activities and other things, because mm-hmm. to me, that's a mistake.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. you know what? It can be fun.
You
know,
be.
Some of the times that, you know, it's interesting because we have so many things that are competing for our attention, and it really is, it's actually endearing when I've invited the kids to come and cook, and they have actually turned away from TV or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And we've
yeah.
had fun, and we get to talk about, wasn't that fun? Let's do that more.
Yeah. And and people forget that. They don't realize that if given the chance, mm-hmm. your family and your children, they want to spend time with you. And mm-hmm. if there's issues there, cooking and preparing food together is a great way to start to bring things back together. You know, mm-hmm. it's really the social glue of our existence.
Mm-hmm.
So if yeah. we're not practicing that with our own children in our own closest relationships, then I think we're doing our kids a disservice, because then they don't even understand the concept that they're going to go forward, and everywhere they go, everyone's going to celebrate by eating together.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't have that connection to food and nourishment. So absolutely, I think it can be fun, and it can be a lot more amazing than you expect if you give it a chance.
Okay. Nisha, this has been so great. Thank you so much. Like really, really helpful, really useful information. And, you know, you appear in a lot of different places, but if people want to engage your services, understand some of the things you're cooking,
yep.
I've cooked some of your recipes.
And Yay!
Amazing. Yes.
Thank you.
How can they get in touch?
Well, we're always trying to put out as much content as we can just to provide service to people and information. So we have a website, which is simplyvibrantnutrition.com. We're also on Instagram, actually probably most active on Instagram, trying to post different videos on foods that are interesting and tips, as well as just some general knowledge about nutrition. So that is Simply Vibrant Nutrition on Instagram. And we also have a Facebook page, you know, and we're always welcoming people to our Facebook community if they want to find out about our services, products we offer. We're working on some new online products for our community, and we'd love to hear what you want and what you need, because it's our goal at Vibrant Nutrition to make sure that we are providing, we're answering that problem. We're providing a solution for you as families in terms of what do you need from the perspective of nutrition, food, eating, behaviors. How can we help you make that part of your life simple and healthy? So we have a lot of different platforms, and we're always, always happy to connect with people in any way we can.
Awesome. Thank you. Simply Vibrant. I love it. It says it all. Simply Vibrant Nutrition. And let me ask you, if there was one thing that people watching could start to action today, what would you like that to be?
Yeah. I would like that to be cooking. I would like people to take time, plan in their week, and say, I'm not working late on Monday. I'm not going to go out and do this errand. I'm going to come home. I'm going to have ingredients there, and I'm going to cook something. In that, eat the food that I make, and I'm gonna just try my best to enjoy it and let it just be. It's about the process. It's not just about the finished result. Unfortunately, with social media right now, I think people feel like their food has to be this luxurious, like absolutely masterful creation. And if you really saw the pictures of the food I cook, it doesn't look pretty, but it's very nutritious and it's easy to make. And so I want people to cook more because it is really truly becoming a lost art. We spend 90 minutes a day on social media. We spend less than 20 preparing our own food. Let's shift that ratio.
Okay. Yeah. And if you will humor me, I'm wondering if you could give us your most profound statement.
Ooh, my most profound statement. Does it have to be about food and nutrition, or can it just
be?
No. I feel like something that really means a lot to me is that, you know, when people, I think it's Maya Angelou, Dr. Maya Angelou, that made this statement, when people show you who they are, believe them.
Okay.
I really like that statement. I just think it sounds maybe a little bit intense, but I just think it's a fantastic statement. It's about just trusting your intuition. And so I think that's something as well that's a little bit, it gets a little muddled these days. It's hard to trust ourselves. Yeah. So I really love the statement. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Nishta, thank you so much for joining us for the Mindful World Summit. Again, I think that what you added to this is really valuable. We'll have us rethinking how we do dinner, how we do breakfast, how we do lunch.
I hope so.
And making it fun, and really about connecting.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I'm so honored to be part of this, and I really appreciate your time as well.
Okay. Take care.
Bye. Take care.